May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Scott Bold on behalf of Appellate Mr. Yee. This case blurs the line between the misdemeanor of hiring illegal aliens and the felony of harboring them. Congress outlined two very clear crimes with very different punishments for those who violate them, and presumably there must be some meaningful distinction between the two. So otherwise, an employer who hires an illegal alien will necessarily always commit the felony. This case erases that line and that distinction.
Well, not exactly. I mean, there's a whole lot more evidence here than Mr. Yee's hiring of many illegal aliens, Chinese and Hispanic, in his restaurant. He was housing them, providing free apartments for them. He was transporting them to and from work. And this is more than just the hiring case.
Well, Judge, yes, there is.
If I recall, you agreed to all that. That's what happened. But what you're complaining about is that this doesn't add up to shielding from the sight of the government. The government still had every opportunity to seize them.
That's correct, Judge. Essentially, what I'm saying is, yes.
Every hiring case is not a shielding case.
I'm sorry?
Every hiring case is not a shielding case.
That's exactly correct, Judge. And Judge Sykes, to address your point, yes, Mr. Yee provided housing for these illegal aliens. The situation is similar to a couple who hires a live-in nanny who happens to be illegal. We wouldn't call them necessarily a felon or less.
We call them attorney generals. But
exactly. But we wouldn't necessarily prosecute them as felons. Okay. Mr. Yee's housing of these illegal aliens was open and notorious. He put them in apartment building, multi-unit apartment buildings, in the middle of Springfield. He admitted to the government officials who were investigating his hiring that he was, in fact, housing them. And he paid for the rent in checks, which connected him to their housing. The government's evidence of shielding in this case is exceedingly thin. What they really rely upon is the testimony of Mr. Omar Hernandez, who's this putative translator. But before we can even reach Mr. Hernandez's testimony, I think we have to put his testimony in context. There's a profound linguistic disconnect between Mr. Yee and Mr. Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez is a native Spanish speaker. He speaks no Chinese, and you can tell from the record he speaks very little English. He's supposed to translate, but he needs a translator himself at trial. Mr. Yee speaks no Spanish. He's a native Chinese speaker and speaks limited English. Okay, so assuming to reach Mr. Hernandez's testimony, you even have to assume that he in fact understood what Mr. Yee was saying and then accurately translated it.
That's a jury argument.
Well, certainly the jury gave his testimony some weight, but what I think we need to consider is how speculative and befuddling Mr. Hernandez's testimony really was. Mr. Hernandez testified that Mr. Yee instructed his illegal alien employees that he fired them. He said, you can no longer work here because you don't have work authorization papers. You must leave this apartment you're living in, and then if you obtain papers, you can come back and maybe there'll be a job for you. And incidentally, this is Mr. Yee parroting back what Agent Merchant told him in December of 2005, which you could find in the appellate's appendix at page 12, at line 7 to 11. Essentially there, Agent Merchant said to Mr. Yee, look, you got to fire these people because they don't have papers, and if they come back with papers, well, then maybe you can rehire them.
He didn't tell them they could come back with fake papers.
That's true, Judge, exactly. And that's what I'm getting to. Okay, Mr. Hernandez didn't testify that Mr. Yee told these employees, come back with fake papers. The government asked Mr. Hernandez, did Mr. Yee say, come back with, quote, real IDs or fake IDs, close quote. And in reply, Mr. Hernandez speculated. He said, and I quote, it would be false because he told them they can go and they can go and buy those papers, close quote. Okay, this is Mr. Hernandez associating the fact that maybe Mr. Yee said there was some sort of cost associated with these papers. It's him speculating that Mr. Yee must have been saying, go get fake papers. But as we know, bona fide papers also cost money. As a matter of fact, they cost several hundred dollars. I think this testimony is too speculative.
The jury was entitled to reject that innocent explanation and accept the guilty one.
respectfully.
Move on to the jury instruction argument.
Absolutely, Judge. Look, here's the reason why the jury instruction was erroneous. The jury instruction permitted the jury to convict Mr. Yee on evidence that only goes to his misdemeanor. Okay? The jury instruction's use of the words any means would have allowed the jury to convict Mr. Yee for failing to file Illinois state unemployment fund insurance reporting forms. It would have allowed the jury to convict Mr. Yee for his failure to fill out I-9 forms when he in fact told the government that the employees were illegal. And the reason why this is important is because the district court used a general jury verdict form. We don't know if the jury convicted Mr. Yee because of this erroneous instruction or because they found that Mr. Yee concealed or they found that Mr. Yee harbored. And because we don't know, I think we must assume that this instruction infected the jury's deliberations and ultimately led to Mr. Yee's guilty verdict.
As to the preservation of the error, it's my understanding that the supplemental instruction came about as a result of a jury question, what does it mean to shield, words to that effect. And there was a discussion among counsel in the court about whether to answer that question in the first place, and the position of the defense was no, right?
So far, yes.
But once the court determined to answer the question and there was an agreement on the language, ultimately, and so isn't that a waiver?
Judge, no, it's not a waiver. And look, this you're right. This came up in the context of a jury question. If you read the record, it's pretty clear. Counsel and the court were scrambling around to craft an instruction. Initially, defense counsel at trial objected to giving the instruction in its entirety, saying that he didn't think the jury should be instructed as to the meaning of this term and it should be they should use their common sense and understanding of the term. But he also objected to the substance of the instruction and that the fact that it doesn't square with the Cantu decision. The court recognized this objection. As a matter of fact, the court seemed to have granted counsel a continuing objection and made counsel's objections as a matter of record. I think if you read the record, it's fair to say that counsel became convinced the court was going to give this objection or this instruction.
Sometime you got to quit fighting because you're going to lose anyway.
Exactly, Judge. I think that I'll admit this was not a perfect objection. It could have been clearer, but I think it's adequate to preserve the jury instruction issue.
So you're asking us to adopt this substantially facilitate definition of shielding that other circuits use?
Well, Judge, I'm asking first and foremost, I'm asking the court to reverse the district court's judgment, to vacate the jury verdict, and to enter a judgment of acquittal.
You're not asking us to formulate a proper instruction, I take it.
Not necessarily. I'm asking the court to recognize that intent must be an element of shielding.
What you want us to do is to say this instruction was wrong and shouldn't have been given, and it might have affected the jury, and so therefore we're reversing it.
That absolutely correct, Judge.
And let somebody else worry about the next.
That's absolutely correct. And with that,
as chairman of the Pattern Criminal Jury Instruction Committee for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, I'm perfectly happy to accept your discussion.
But the jury was instructed on intent.
Yes. The elements instruction did contain an intent instruction. If the panel has any further questions,
are there any rebuttals, so you might as well sit down.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
May it please the court, William Brown for the government.
Mr. Brown, were you the trial lawyer?
I was not.
I didn't think you were.
I guess that's either good or bad. In any event, the first issue on the sufficiency, the defendant he has conceded that there's no real dispute that his conduct substantially facilitated the illegal aliens remaining in the United States. What he does dispute is our proof of intent that he was doing doing something clandestinely. And apart from
shielding them is what we're talking about. Whether the evidence shows that they were shielding them and intending to keep the government from finding out who they were and where they
were. I'll accept that for purposes of the instructions for all the harboring.
Well, that's what his beef is, I said. I didn't say anything more than that. That's what he's claiming. And so,
very well. Our evidence of intent was not just the Omar Hernandez translation, which I'll get to in a minute, but his whole course of conduct. He was hiring, housing, and transporting these individuals, which kept them out of the government's eye. But the way he did it, he paid them in cash. There were not only were there no I-9s, there were no time cards, no tax withholding, no job applications. When he filed reports with the state, he left their names off, the Hispanic employees' names off. The whole course of conduct was clandestine. He points out in his reply brief that that paying in cash is somehow necessary. Well, paying in cash was something he did, but he also went beyond that. Nobody, I don't think, can accept it as a legitimate standard course of business to have all your employees with cash, no taxes, no withholding, no unemployment insurance reforms, no time cards, no papers to speak of.
11 hours a day, 6 days a week.
11 hours a day, 6 days a week. In fact,
$1,000 a month.
I will note that he says in his closing argument, again, not the appellate attorney, but in the trial attorney's closing argument for the defendant, he says it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if you do not want the government to know you are harboring illegal aliens, you don't write checks with your signature, you pay cash. He was making the point that he had written checks for some of these apartments, which, by the way, didn't identify the occupants as illegal aliens, just meant the restaurant was paying for them rather than. And I don't know, I think in a lot of renters, landlords, it makes it easier for an illegal to find housing if it's rented for them by somebody else.
Were there any, I'll call them legals, who were getting apartments?
The testimony was yes.
Because I know everybody wasn't an illegal alien that was working for him, is that correct?
That's correct. As the evidence such as it is, that all the Hispanics employees were illegals, and some of the Chinese, but not all.
Did all the Chinese get an apartment?
Whether it's all or not, I don't know.
Well,
but certainly
I'm just looking
some.
At it, if he made any distinction between illegal and legal and giving them an apartment.
Not that the evidence
that works both
showed.
Ways for him. I'm just curious which way what he did.
Not that the evidence showed that the evidence does not show he made a distinction on that basis. Nonetheless, that was there was a distinction for between the Hispanic employees and the Chinese employees with respect to some of the documents, like the I-9s and the time cards, and some of the documentation.
Was there documentation? I'm looking at the people who were legal, let's put it that way. I assume some of them were, and that maybe I'm making a wrong assumption, but I assume that there were documents that he could submit showing them to be legal. They were valid in here, maybe whatever.
Yes, he prepared I-9s for legal employees.
Whatever you need to work here and not be an illegal alien. I don't know who they were or what they were. Maybe they were native here. It's Chinese. I don't know.
There were documents submitted for, for the unemployment. Some of the people with numbers were submitted to the state.
Yeah.
But not the Hispanic employees.
Okay, all of them are presumably illegal.
The defendant testified that all of them that he ever hired were illegal. In fact, the defendant makes the point that he candidly admitted that he was hiring illegal aliens. Well, I'd take that in context. Every time they came in, they would be interviewing these people in the back room. He would say, "Yes, they're illegal." And after the primary occasion, he admitted that afterward he went and fired them because they had been found out. And he took his lawyer in and met with the agents and said that he was going to comply with the rules from now on. And he didn't say, "I'm going to continue to hire every time." And he went out and hired more illegals. And as they left, he hired more and more and more. And as far as we know, they were all illegal continuously. I would like to talk about this Hernandez incident for just a moment, although the court is quite correct. It's a jury issue and it was rejected. But I just can't help but note that although the defendant claims that Hernandez barely speaks English, if you read his testimony just in the beginning, he starts answering a question. The prosecutor asks him, do I really have to ask, can you understand my questions in English? And he answers that he can. And there is, and in fact, he starts answering a question in English. And but the judge interrupts and says, which would you prefer? And he says, well, I'd like to do Spanish. And in the redirect testimony, it's brought out that he's been going to college classes for 2 years, classes conducted in English. So there's not really much basis for that. And as for his claim that his answer to the question is too speculative to be counted on, I would just note that there is an additional confirmation that at the time of the incident, he described them as that the aliens were told they could come back with fake documents. At Government's Appendix 99, Chipolzolo, one of the alien witnesses, testified that he was told by Hernandez, as a translator, that they could come back with fake documents. Turning to the instruction, I don't think there's any question that a plain error standard applies here. If the court reads through the 10 pages directed to this this issue, you will see that the shielding question comes back. The defendant says we shouldn't really give them an explanation or an instruction on specifics. The judge decides he wants to and then tries to figure out the specifics. And at that time, the judge proposes some language that involves substantial facilitation. The defendant objects and talks about Cantu. Then he later drifts back from that, saying, oh, I thought Cantu was some other case. But that's all basically water under the bridge, because that goes on for a couple pages. And then the prosecutor comes forward with essentially the language that's here, which does not refer to substantial facilitation, but refers to there being no requirement for a physical barrier, and that it be done by any means to prevent the detection of the aliens by the government. It's after that point that the judge says to the, do you have any problem with the wording? And he basically says, well, I want this special, I want a few more words on avoiding detection. And the court puts them in and says, okay, is that acceptable wording? And he says, yes, but, you know,
he says
acknowledging
yes.
Our prior objection.
He says yes.
He says, yes, that's acceptable. But with the caveat
But it's still my objection to continuous.
I object to any instruction. And the judge
objection.
And the judge tries. Well, not a object to it. He says with respect to my former objection. And the judge, trying to find out what he wants in this instruction, says, and that's just as opposed to giving the instruction at all. And he confirms, yes. If you'd like me to discuss why it's not error, I will briefly, but if not, I'll sit down.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Vold, how much time? You've got a minute and a half.
Thank you. Your Honors, I think this is clear that this is an illegal hiring case, not a shielding case. If the court has any further questions, I'd be delighted to answer them. Otherwise, I think I'm going to yield back the balance of my time.
Counsel says that the trial attorney agreed to the instruction you're complaining about. Do you find that to be true?
No, I do not, Judge. I think that is erroneous. The exact quote is, you know, Judge, subject to my prior objection, I agree, or I have no
prior objection is simply to instructing on a subject at all, or does it have to do with some portion of the instruction you didn't want?
It has to do with, number one, giving instruction at all, and number two, the entirety of the instruction.
That's not how the exchange reads, counsel. Judge, subject to our prior objection, that would be acceptable wording. The court, okay. And the prior objection is the giving of an answer at all. Counsel, correct, as opposed to just common phraseology, which is what you asked for, or whoever trial counsel was, what defense asked for at the beginning, just tell the jury to rely on their common understanding of the phrase. So you didn't preserve an objection to the actual wording of the supplemental instruction as it was given to the jury and, in fact, acquiesced in it, as I read this transcript.
Judge, if you track back a little bit, I think there's a colloquy between counsel and the court where the defense counsel said the court offers its formulation of the instruction, and counsel says, well, you understand I'd be objecting, and the court says, your objection is to the substance. And then, you know, defense counsel goes on to say, yeah, it's to the substance, it's to giving one at all, it's to the fact that it doesn't square with Cantu. As I said before, this is by no means a perfect objection, and it could have been much clearer. I think for purposes of this case, and I see that my time's expired, so unless I can have a moment to finish my thought.
You want at least plain error review?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.